둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Nice to be met.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button. In fact, I put out three new interviews every single week, new ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can do so at all the usual spots: iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, or YouTube for the video versions. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I get to talk with Ronnie Dunn, one half of country music legendary duo. Let's put the legendary in there, Brooks and Dunn. Ronnie's got a brand new album called 100 Proof Neon. It's an album that finds him kind of looking back to the sounds and themes of his late 80s, early 90s classics. He's going to tell us about searching for that ultimate union of Merle Haggard meets Mick Jagger. That's what he says. The concepts of neon and whiskey that hold the songs together. And recording The Blade after Ashley Monroe had made a hit out of that one. Ronnie Dunn's also going to be discussing the collaborations on the LP, his publishing company, and his photography. This is a lot of fun. Let's do this. Talking about 100 Proof Neon, it's Kyle Meredith with Ronnie Dunn.
Holy cow, that was a mouthful, man. Were you reading that, or are you already conditioned just being in this business so long that you can pull it off like that intro?
All the first part's right here, but the last part, that's true. That's all real, so...
Much appreciated. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you got a brand new solo album called 100 Proof Neon. That has been said, you know, it's said in the press release, you know, I don't know how you'd like to word this, but this finds you sort of reaching back for a sound, you know, some of that 80s and 90s vibe. If that's actually the case, what did you want to go for and why?
Well, a few songs came to like along early on and set the tone, like Broken Neon Heart, which was the first song we put out. And the Honky Tonk Town came behind that. And then from there, the momentum. And I've been wanting to do this kind of record forever. You know, it's just so much fun to sit down and do it on your own without that, you know, record label conference room, whatever meeting you kind of have to have. Even Willie did it. So funny. People go, no, yeah, you're Willie Nelson. You got to pick whatever you want to. There was no, he did not in the day, you know. But this one was just, it's just purely the vibe and stuff that I grew up playing, coming through the clubs in Oklahoma and Texas. You know, I would sneak out of college. I went to one of those religious colleges out in West Texas. It's very conservative. And you weren't allowed to go out and even, you know, go to clubs and things like that. So we would sneak out and book these small towns outside of Abilene. And do the VFWs and play for the door. You play there for like 2 or 3 weeks and suddenly maybe you might get enough gas to come home, right? But what it taught me from the ground up, I mean, it's just its own university. is that, you have to get people to dance. You have to allow them to have a good time. And if you can get them up to dance, whether it's the cowboy that doesn't dance or whatever, I mean, it was a test tube for us on stage. We're seeing it all. We're seeing people do the craziest things, but the majority of it was really based around the cultural dancing in that part of the country, the two-step, the waltzes, shuffles, all that. And they all had something to say. It's kind of a combination to me. My fantasy was going to a club with a great country band that kind of gave you that Rolling Stones feeling, and just trying to find a way to cross that. And so a lot of the initial stuff that we did, and a lot of later on stuff that we did with Brooks and Dunn was searching for that union of Merle Haggard meets, Mick Jagger.
That's a good little union right now. That's served you well. I heard you say that in another interview that the bartenders only cared if the crowd danced and drank.
Yeah, it didn't matter if you were a good band or not. It's like he who at the end of the night was responsible for the largest beer tab as a band would get hired back.
So that directly or automatically directs you as to what song you're writing, as to what song you're looking for in your collaborations from that point on?
No, it just heavily influences it. I don't know that it necessarily, consciously dictates it, but it's, well, here's something that's funny. Subconscious, it was not aware of it. Totally unprofessional. I finished the record and I bring it home for my wife, Janine, to hear the roughs. And she goes, "Every song on there has neon in it." She goes, "How are you going to get over that?" Goes, "Come on, people aren't going to listen to that stuff from here on out." It used to be like every song had dancing in it or something. I sit there and she was right. And of course, I bucked her. I was like, it's just what I want to do. And, she was correct about it. So I thought about it long and hard, and I found a cheap way out. I said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll own it. I'll just call it 100 proof neon, and it is what it is."
Well, there's a bit of bingo that you can do on this. Neon is in almost every song. Whiskey, jukeboxes, yeah. Bars. I think every song, but maybe The Blade, if I have that right, mentions, if not all of those, at least one or two of those. Like, it becomes a concept album in a way. Do you look at it like that?
I try to get away from the obvious pickup thing, which you're going to get grief on anyway. But I just jump right over cold beer and go right to whiskey. So I don't, there's that. Makes it much edgier thinking back. So I don't know. What was the question?
Just talking about, you do have a, well, I guess I was asking, like, if you come to think of it sort of in a concept album that way, because you do have such consistency with certain subjects, words.
Yeah. There's a thread of that. And that was conscious. You're right. The idea of bringing back, twin fiddles and incorporating them into the sound. And of course, I've always had my favorite guitar player in the world is Brent Mason, and he's just a Telecaster string bending, popping, Hall of Famer, just unbelievable. So I get him in there. Gary Morris on steel, who plays in the band, but he's a West Coast guy, but lives in Nashville, but has played with us for years. And you get the right guys in there, cast that band, and bingo, we're right back in the bars.
There's a lot of West Coast guys now living in Nashville. The great flood from LA. Have you noticed that's had its own influence on the town and the scene these days?
I don't know. Joy Moy came down from Canada to produce stuff with Big Loud, and his reference to music was not country. He'll tell you flat out. And he's doing a record right now with Jake Worthington, who's on the song Honky Tonk Town, a new kid from Texas, Houston. But his guy's like, sounds like Lefty Frizzell. I mean, for real, it's crazy. And it's just a, you know, good old country boy. When he's not welding and hauling cattle somewhere, he's out planting a beer joint in Texas. He's got a record deal. Here he comes.
Well, it does this album, regardless of the subjects, it's interesting that it sort of comes after two records of looking back in different ways with the Brooks and Dunn record and how you repurpose those songs with your covers record, which I absolutely loved, by the way. Thanks. Some great stuff on there. Do you find that it's and using kind of the purpose that we're talking about with this one, as you are looking back to those days, do you find it's a time of reflection in your writing and in your work?
Yeah, well, the rock thing, I've been wanting to do forever, and I didn't think, I mean, literally, I would have been happy had it just stayed, you know, here at the house. I could put it on in the car or whatever, drive, do whatever. But I love the way the band came out again. Those are country musicians playing that stuff, and they pulled it off in a lot of cases. But a lot of my earlier stuff, like playing around with a solo deal, and I don't truly mean playing around with it, because B&D gets the nod, obviously. But it was just it's just getting the chance to sit in and do what I love. You know, I like to do. It's kind of get it out of me. You know. I can remember sitting in an A&R meeting, you know, in an official, you know, a round table deal with record label executives, and they were well intended, you know. It was, but just going, I can't do this anymore, y'all. Can't do it. You know, can't be told I can't do song that's just because there's something, you know, sounds country about the fiddle. You know, I'm just gonna go do my own deal, and then see what happens.
Well, look what happened.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Here we are podcasting.
No, it doesn't look like it's been a bad road on that side of things for you. Right.
It's fun. It's fun. Real fun.
Yeah.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Well, and further on in this record too, I mean, you know, I mentioned the Blade a minute ago. That's such a beautiful, beautifully written song right there.
Yeah.
What's the story with that one?
That's a once in a lifetime or there. You know, I really do think that songs like that come along. You know, we're talking about like the dance, that quality stuff. I hope you dance. Leon Womack got, but it was pitched to me a couple of years ago. And pitched to Ashley Monroe on the same day. So, I mean, I heard it and said, ooh, let's nail it, you know, nail it down. And someone said, well, Ashley got it first, and she's actually going to make it the title of her album. And I know and love Ashley, so that's, you know, good, you know, have fun. But anyway, it's her record's been out long enough to where, if anything, it'll just draw attention to it. I go back to the days when I said, like, earlier, that, you know, people like Tammy Wynette, you know, Christopherson, Cash, Willie, they would all, if there was a good song that came along, everyone would honor that song. You could record it for whatever reason. And then I don't know why that stopped. I'm sure it's different label economics and revenue involved. I don't know.
Yeah. Trends. I mean, it is new generations don't treat the archives the same way.
But I don't know why, just
right.
There it is.
Well, you get a song like that, and I started thinking about, if I don't know if you're ever on your quest for the perfect heartbreak songs, even stuff like that. But I liked what you said in another interview too. You said I think someone had, hero mentor, I don't know, but they had said to you, no matter how sad it is, you have to leave a ray of hope.
Yes, that was our first producer, Don Cook, and good friend. When I first came to town, I'd never co-written, and we were in the, I don't know, first or second section with he and Kix and I. He said, of course, everything you want to do when you think in country at that point was write a sad song. They're easier to write. They really are. But Don goes, I'll tell you some advice right now, whether you take it or not, I'll offer it. If you can leave a ray of hope and positivity at the end of the tunnel, it always helps. And it's kind of a way to get the message in that you're heartbroken, but you're gonna make your way out of it. You're an optimist. You're an optimistic heartbroken guy. I get it.
It's quite different than the late 50s and early 60s when you'd have the car wreck songs like Last Kiss it's like, nope, they're dead.
I can remember sitting in the back seat of my parents' car. We were driving somewhere in New Mexico. The desert stared out the window. But we were out on a date on Saturday. And we were killed in a car wreck. Dude.
There were so many of those, too. That, speaking of trends, that's an interesting trend. Like, we're all going to write, you're going to die in a car, a motorcycle wreck or something, but you're going to die in this song.
That's exactly. It's like, what in the hell? Started that one.
You mentioned some collabs on here, and I want to bring them up real quick. Parker McCollum, Jake Worthington. What's the significance of teaming up with these fellas?
Their voices. Jake sounds like Lefty Frizzell, Flat Dust, and he's working on a record with Big Cloud Records right now with Joy Moy producing it. It's going to be interesting to see how it comes out, but he is a hardcore country singer. It's like when he's not singing and stuff, I think he's hauling cattle from Lubbock to Amarillo or chasing tumbleweed somewhere. But he's really a character and a great, great guy. Parker, again, just listen to voices. He has a real Texas thing. I mean, he could be an old school country singer any day, at any time. But Parker walks in, he looks like he's just walked out of GQ in a t-shirt or playing baseball somewhere, and pulls up in a hot black and white Corvette. Comes upstairs and he goes, "What you got? What are we doing?" So I said, "I wrote this song." I said, "You're a Texan. I'm a Texan." Wrote this song called Road to Abilene, and it's actually about me leaving Abilene to go chase the music thing, and he jumped in there and did a great job. Maybe better than me, which kind of makes me mad. I'll bring his voice down in the mix.
About that, you've been doing. If we could hear more about, because you got Perfect Pitch Publishing. Speaking of voices, and talking about these younger guys. Like, what are you doing with that, and what does that mean to the community?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I keep it small. I want it down to 4 or 5 max writers. I have a big place downtown. It's not far from Music Row, but not on Music Row. And it's actually an old converted warehouse, and I can walk in the door and hear somebody over here writing country songs. I hear somebody over here writing rock LA sound and stuff. And I get inspired by them. They're all young, in their early 20s for the most part, other than Tom, and he's but it's fun, and you feed off that creativity, you know, and it kind of hurts my feelings that they're not really asking me for a lot of advice yet. And when I do, you can kind of tell them, like, so they're going, okay, thank you. You can leave now. But it's fun. It's fun. We get together and laugh and listen to everybody's songs and just shred them. And, you know, it's fun. Fun to do it.
Well, and creativity, you got a lot of that going on too. I read a little bit about the Lensman Project.
Yeah, that's total fun. That's total, you know, a hobby. But I'm surrounded by some really good, you know, seasoned photographers that go, hey, turn your camera on. Take the lens.
Was that always part of you, or is that something you just picked up, you know, more recently?
You know, I've been doing it for a long time. I had a house in Santa Fe for years, and I would sit outside and set my camera up and shoot sunsets that just went, and they were different every day. Unreal, unbelievable. Just to kind of, and that gave me a feel, a general, you know, 101 feel for the camera. And then I started studying it, you know, reading and chasing around. Then a buddy that had been a 20 plus year veteran at Sports Illustrated moved back to town, and he was just wanting to get out and do some stuff, you know, more fun and independent, away from assignment stuff. So we started traveling all over the place. We went to Ecuador. We sailed into to Cuba when Obama opened it up, and I've been all over the world. I mean, Alaska and other places, a lot of other places actually, and he's just kind of mentored me along the way.
Well, how cool! What just a hobby? Where a hobby will take you, you know?
Right. We just get, like everything else, we get carried away with it. Next thing you know, we're you know, Galapagos on the ground shooting a lizard in the face.
It's incredible, and actually incredible that you find a time to do it. I mean, looking at all this, you know, you've been. I don't know how are you balancing the tour, like the Brooks and Dunn tour and the solo stuff. Like, how's that working out for the rest of the year for you?
Well, I don't know. We're talking about that strategy right now. Just before you and I talked, we're still trying to handle out how that I can go out and justifiably promote this record, Hunter Proof Neon, and do the we did a live album with Brooks and Dunn that we're finishing up right now in the tour. So. Got to keep all that, you know, hopefully running in sync and not watering down the other stuff. You know, I don't know how it's going to work.
Well, the fact that you've even got these options, you know, 30, 40 years into a career, that just goes to show what this music does and what the music means for everybody else, you know. So
well, that's great to hear. And, you know, I'm lucky. I feel so lucky. I do. I truly do to be here at this point. You know, golly, you know, just playing dress up, going out and singing.
Please keep singing and keep writing these songs because 100 Proof Neon, it's so much fun to listen to. I can drink to it, I can dance to it, and that's doing all the tricks right there.
There you go. Hit, bang, boom, going to the bank.
I can cry to it too. That's the important part.
That'll even get me money. There you go. It's all good.
Ronnie, thanks so much for taking the time. This was such an honor and a pleasure to talk about this today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for your time, man. Good to talk to you.
My thanks to Ronnie Dunn. The new album is called 100 Proof Neon. Thanks to you again for checking out the episode, the series. Do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. Again, you get 3 episodes every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, or YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all 3 of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.